You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast. Here on the Locked On Podcast Network, I want to thank you, as always, for making us part of your daily routine, wherever you're going, whatever it is you're doing right now, if you're on a train, in a car, at the gym, thank you, in the shower. I know some of y'all listen to us in the shower. Hey, what's up? Thanks for listening to us. Very, very much appreciate you guys, all of you, taking time every day to download and listen to our show. I am John Corrales of RedsArmy.com and Boston.com, and on Wednesdays of the Locked On NBA podcast, here alone for the moment, normally joined by Jay King of MassLive.com or Sam Packard, formerly of WEEI, but they are off doing their own thing tonight, and I am here to bring you a conversation with Sean Devaney of The Sporting News. I talked to Sean a little while ago. I'm going to play you that audio. He wrote a nice big piece on Jason Tatum and in his emergence here in the wake of a lot of injuries. So it's a nice conversation. We talked for about 20 minutes or so, and we'll get into everything that he saw and things that I've seen. It's a fun conversation. Before we get to that, a couple of bits of news. First, on Kyrie Irving, he has gone through his second opinions and talked to doctors. As of right now, according to Chris Mannix, there's no update as we speak. We will know more on Friday. This is the Friday show, so hopefully by the time you listen to this, this will be a little outdated because we want to know what's going on. But as of right now, as I record here on Thursday night, no update yet. He's gone through, talked to the doctors, and we'll know in the next day or two, according to Chris Mannix, what's going to happen. And it's interesting to kind of go through this whole thing. What is Kyrie Irving going to decide? I'm sure that this is something that he's just trying to figure out if by playing on it, is he going to hurt himself even more? He's got another huge contract coming up in a couple of years. And I'm sure he doesn't want to hurt himself and put himself in jeopardy. I know he has seen what has happened in the past here in Boston with the Isaiah Thomas stuff. And I'm sure guys just want to protect themselves. There's a lot of money at stake. And no one wants to go through and think that maybe I'm hurting myself by continuing to play. There does not seem to be any sort of urgency. There doesn't seem to be any sort of worry on the Celtics' part. But we'll see what the doctors say. If they say he needs surgery, then it's probably the end of the season for Kyrie at this point, because you've got to cut the knee open and remove whatever screws are there, if that is the actual thing. And I doubt he's going to heal up in time for the playoffs. I guess we'll have to wait to see what the specifics are. But as of right now, that's going to be the decision. And if you're looking at, obviously, no Hayward. Marcus Smart not being back until maybe the second round at the earliest. Is Kyrie going to push himself to go out there and potentially risk any more damage? So it really depends on what the doctors say. And then we'll see what he decides. And that's going to have a big impact on how this season goes. I think with all of the injuries, no one's really expecting much anymore. We got our hopes up after the Celtics were the top seed for a while. And then, you know, things happen. Injuries happen. So don't want to go too crazy now. We'll see what the results are. And we'll go from there. But like I said, the Celtics don't seem to be overly worried, and we'll just see. Maybe they just let him rest for the rest of the regular season, bring him back with a couple of games left, and he can be fine with the lightened schedule in the playoffs. The other thing today was Jaylen Brown announcing that he was targeting the Sacramento game on Sunday for his potential return. Obviously, he had that horrific fall with and damn near killed himself out there. Luckily, and he says this, that luckily it wasn't worse. So Sunday, the Celtics play the Sacramento Kings at 6 o'clock, and that could be Jaylen's return date. So that is a very good sign, because that means it seems like he's gone through the concussion protocol and he's just about ready to be cleared. He has been shooting around. We've seen the Twitter videos, and he seems to be doing okay. He's spoken. He's talked to people about it. He's joked around saying his mom said he don't dunk anymore. I think that's not exactly advice that he's going to follow necessarily, but maybe you shouldn't hold on to the rim like that. You just kind of just slowly lay it in somehow when your momentum is flying like that. Don't go out there and kill yourself, buddy. The scariest part was him kind of recounting what he remembers about that moment. And he says, and I'll read directly from the Globe, Adam Himmelsbach. Go check out Adam's piece on in the Globe, but I'll read these a couple of paragraphs. He remembers that brief, terrifying moment when all the momentum from his surge had left his body almost parallel to the court and his hand slipped off the rim. It's probably for the best that he doesn't remember the impact when his upper back took the brunt as it slammed into the hardwood floor. Brown's eyes remained open as he blinked several times and he stared straight ahead, appearing to be in a state of shock. Now here's his quote. I remember waking up and there was a bunch of people standing around me and I was like, what the hell is going on? I had no idea. I had been out for like 30 seconds. I just remember waking up and there's a bunch of people around me and I tried to get up and they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I was like, what's the big deal? And that's all I remember, to be honest. That is scary. And you could see it. He had that thing where when somebody gets knocked out, their arms go straight out. It was very kind of telltale. You've seen it in other sports. You've seen it in boxing. Scary, scary stuff. Again, luckily, it's amazing that all he had was the concussion. And I don't want to make it sound like a concussion is nothing. Concussion is very serious. I'm saying it's amazing that he didn't have other very serious things. He said in this piece, it felt like he was in a car accident. So it was very, very violent. And again, very, very scary. So bottom line, though, it's great that he is going to be back so soon, really. Only missed, what, 5 games? So great to hear that he is close to coming back. Somewhere on this West Coast road trip, we'll get Jaylen Brown back. Okay, that's the news. Now let's turn to my conversation with Sean Devaney of The Sporting News. He just wrote a big piece on Jason Tatum. Comes a couple days after I wrote a piece on Boston.com about Jason Tatum. Similar themes that his emergence now, a couple of games where he has kind of stepped up. He got to speak a little more in depth with Jason. So got some good stuff out of him. So here's my conversation with The Sporting News, Sean Devaney. All right, Sean, thanks for taking the time here to join us here on the podcast. Appreciate it. We actually both this week have gone at this Jason Tatum thing from similar angles, basically that the Celtics are getting this kind of super production out of this rookie. And, you know, when I wrote about it, it was like, hey, this is tantalizing. We really need more of this. And you come at it from the, this is really good. He's probably going to get more of this and it's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously you'd rather not have two of your highest paid players be injured and not available for the stretch run and into the playoffs here. But having said that, I don't think anybody expected to see what we've seen out of Tatum in the first 71 games that we've seen so far. And when you put that into the context of where this team is and where it might go, I think that you really want to see what can this guy do going against. I mean, he went up against Paul George the other night, and we saw what he did with 23 points, 8-for-12 shooting. You really want to see what this guy can do against the best, and that I think will inform some of the decisions you have to make going forward. Seeing him against the best competition in the toughest situations, even though he's only 20 years old, I think that that gives you a pretty good perspective on what you can expect from him in the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, and so he has. I hate to use these terms, like you said, but he's benefited from the Celtics injury bugs. Like, no one here wanted any of those things, but out of the bad comes some good, that he had an opportunity with having to fill a void from Gordon Hayward going down. He had an opportunity to start. Now he started every game this season. And so now he's getting another opportunity with Kyrie's knee and all that other stuff. And he's shown some aggressiveness. Now I'm wondering, from your perspective, do you see this aggressiveness as a good sign of his, maturing and saying earlier in the season he wasn't being that aggressive, he wasn't taking over, but now he's kind of finding this opportunity to say, all right, look, the team needs me and I'm going to do this, whereas before he was still a little bit reticent out there?
Yeah, this offense is a little different because it's not like a lot of NBA offenses that run out of, okay, here's the pick and roll, and, we're going to try to get into the defense. And, this is a much more motion offense. There's a lot more ball sharing. What this offense seeks to do is not get layups necessarily. It's get spot up open shots. And so it's a little different that way. And I think that it took him a little while to adjust to that. I think with Kyrie Irving out there, early in the season, he was a little bit of a security blanket for Jason Tatum, where he could kind of just play off of Kyrie. And I pointed this out that, obviously small sample size, I get that and all that. The first three games without Kyrie Irving, one was in November, one was in December, one was in early January, and Tatum really struggled in all three of those games. When you look at what he's done since then, without Kyrie in there, he's been a much different player. He's been much more aggressive. He's been much more willing to sort of put the team on his back a little bit. He's handled the ball more, and that's something I think that we've seen from him more as he's gone throughout the season, which I think is an important step for him and something he needs to work on in the next couple years. But if you look at the last eight games that he's played without Kyrie Irving, it's been 18 points a game, 50% shooting, 37.5% from the 3-point line. That's pretty good, and that's an indication of a guy who, like I said, had a bit of a security blanket with Kyrie Irving earlier in the year and has shifted a little bit later in the year and is much more capable of taking on that lead scorer role when he needs to.
So one of the things that's going to happen when everybody's healthy, there's going to be a lot of shots that they're going to be evenly distributed throughout everything. And you do talk about this in the piece a little bit. When everybody's back, the one thing that we in Boston really want to know is how much does this all continue? Can Tatum be a 20-point a game scorer when he's got Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward to also carry a bunch of the offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and that's something that I think we need to we're going to have to watch and wait and see to figure out, because Kyrie Irving's going to get his, and I think we all know that he's going to get 17, 18 shots a game. That's going to be pretty standard for him. But then what happens with the rest of them? Because, you know, you'd like to see a little more from Jaylen Brown, you know, in terms of what is he just going to be, you know, a junk offensive player, you know, a fourth option who gets a lot of stuff off of that, his athleticism, his rebounding and transition and things like that? Or does he have enough to show you what he can do in terms of his perimeter game? You know, I mean, does he, how much does he have to grow, and will that stunt his growth? You know, obviously Gordon Hayward, we've seen what he's done in the past offensively, and you'd like to see that continue. So yeah, I mean, it is difficult because you do have this, it's a problem I think any coach would love to have, of course. But you know, it is going to be, you've got this guy, this young guy who maybe you thought was going to take a little bit of time to develop. I think everybody knew he was going to be pretty NBA ready when he came in from the draft. But having said that, he's exceeded your expectations. So, you know, now what do you do with him? And, you know, now how do you fit him into a scheme where, you know, you probably figured that he'd be the third or fourth option. He's showing number one option capability. So how do you deal with it?
All right, Sean, before we continue, I want to remind our listeners that the Thursday Locked On NBA show has a great conversation between David Locke, founder of the network, and Adam Silver, NBA commissioner. A wide-ranging interview, lasts about 10 minutes or so. You got to go check that out. He talks about gambling. He talks about expansion. It talks about the future of broadcasts, highlights versus live games, getting games on your phone, how that's going to work in the future. A lot there to talk about and to digest, and you have to go check it out. It's Adam Silver on the Locked On NBA podcast. Go subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast, because again, I am the host of the Wednesday Locked On NBA show with Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans. We've got a daily variety of shows, starting with the big stories from the local experts on Monday, and then we carry it all the way through to Friday. So go check it out. Subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast where you get your podcasts today. All right, Sean, the impressive thing about Tatum, I think, is in his ability to defend as well as score. Like, we're all focused on the scoring, but his ability to defend has been a little bit more surprising to me. And you mentioned a stat here in your piece that he has been the Celtics' best player in transition. And that, I think, is born from him being able to get into passing lanes, get deflections, and get out on the break. So I think it's when we look at the future, the defense is going to be as much a part of his offense, I think, moving forward. And the Celtics will be able to create a lot of opportunities to score, not just in the half court, but getting out into transition.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that goes to Jaylen Brown as well. And I would compare it, and you know, I'm doing this, you know, fully understanding that that we're talking about two completely different players. But if you compare it to what Golden State, you know, when they get Kevin Durant, who was, you know, always a pretty good defensive player, but never a great defensive player, but you put him next to Draymond Green, and all of a sudden he becomes a great defensive player. You know, it changes the way he plays defense and what he's able to do in terms of gambling in passing lanes and things like that. I think you see the same sort of effect that Jaylen Brown can have on Jason Tatum, where he goes from, you know, an above average defender to a really good defender, playing next to what is a potentially great defender, I think, in Jaylen Brown. So as those two guys develop together, I think that that Jaylen Brown will help to bring out sort of the best defensive player that Jason Tatum can be. And sometimes you need that. You know, sometimes, you know, if you're on an island and you're a good defensive player, but you don't have the guy next to you or the couple guys next to you that you need, then it kind of wears you down and you're not the defensive player that you could be. I think that's something that a lot of rookies especially fall into because they're going on to bad teams. But that's something that has been reversed with Tatum, because he's gone on to a good team. He's gone on to a team with good defensive players and a good defensive scheme, and you see him benefiting because of it.
One of the other things that you bring up in this piece is the rookie wall, which is always like one of those, is it real? Is it not? And it seemed to be real for him. And I should take an opportunity here to commend you for the, for getting him to talk about this, because anybody who tries to interview Jason Tatum knows it's not easy to get him to open up much, you know, but he did open up about struggling a little bit through that rookie wall.
Yeah. And, you know, he pointed out, and I forgot this, that, that he actually didn't play his first 8 games in college. You know, so not only did he not play, has he not played anything like these minutes before? He didn't even play standard minutes in college. You know, he only played 29 of Duke's 37 games that year. So, you know, he did say that, you know, when he got to about mid-January, and you know, I know everybody points to that London trip as such a negative for the Celtics. I think it was probably a negative for Tatum more than anybody else, and that helped to sort of drag things down at that time. And you know, I do think he sort of bottomed out there, and he didn't necessarily point to that game or point to that trip or anything, but he did say, you know, that the adjustment of travel, you know, it's something that you can deal with early on, and it's even fun if you're a young guy and you're going out there and you're playing all the time and you're going 100 miles an hour and you don't know that you got to pace yourself. You don't know what you don't know at that point. And I think that's what he was getting into. And yeah, the thing that he said was that, you know, once he sort of fought through it, he didn't say he did anything special or whatever to get through it, or that, you know, changed his diet he didn't do any of that sort of stuff. It just kind of kept at it. And he had plenty of people around him telling him, you know, just keep doing what you're doing and you'll get through it. And, I think we saw certainly after the All-Star break, that he's been back to, where he was at the beginning of the season or even better. I mean, really in the last few weeks, you can say, he's been even better.
Somebody who did believe in him is Coach Brad Stevens, who, after the Pelicans game, when I talked to him, it's told me, that they're probably relying on Tatum a little too much in some ways, and they probably need to distribute that a little bit. And I know when you talked to him, he basically said, we're just going to have to keep throwing him to the wolves and keep going to him. So it's one of those things where I feel like Stevens is saying, yeah, we're probably giving him a ton, but he keeps sort of handling it. Yeah. So we're just going to keep giving him whatever we can give him and just kind of see what that threshold is. At the same time, I want to get your take on what you think that confidence to keep giving him things is affecting Tatum. Is Tatum looking at this and saying, hey, they want me to do more, and that gives me confidence, or does that workload get to be a little too much, do you think?
No, and I think that he takes some comfort, and it's always interesting, John, because you get sort of a mixed bag when you ask folks this. You know, would you rather be a rookie on a bad team? You know, would you rather be Dennis Smith, right? And you're going out and you can get 15 to 20 shots, but you know you're in a losing situation. Or would you rather be, you know, in Jason Tatum's situation where, you know, you're going to only get 8, maybe 9 shots in some games, but you're in a winning situation, so you're learning that culture, you're learning that level. It's tough, you know. I mean, you'll get different answers from different coaches, and it probably applies different to different guys. And I think it's interesting too, John, if you look at it, and I mentioned this in the story, is that, you know, when you think back of how they handled, Jaylen Brown last year, you know, there were so many times where I would just watch and I would say, put the guy back in, you know, put him back in. Certainly in the playoffs when it seemed like they had nothing to lose, I just kept wondering, why aren't they playing this guy more? Mm-hmm. And they've taken a completely different approach, with Jason Tatum. And I don't know the extent to which that is something that has just been out of necessity because of injuries and things like that, because Hayward got injured but Tatum was in that starting five right from the beginning. So it's hard to say exactly what they were going to do. Had everyone been healthy, had Morris been healthy to start the year, had Hayward been healthy. But when you compare the way they've handled Tatum to the way they've handled Brown, it's pretty interesting. And I can say that I know the front office had wished that they had played Brown more, but I think Brad Stevens was really, reluctant to do so and wanted to bring him along slowly. I wonder if Brad Stevens would have liked to have brought in Tatum, Tatum along more slowly, but basically wasn't able to just because of the realities of the roster.
I know it's hard to imagine. Like, what if they did that, and would he be better now than this?
Right.
Or worse? It's, you don't know. You can say that part of what he's doing now is because he's gotten the opportunity to play. It is a very interesting conversation to have, because do the guys on bad teams get better by just being able to go out there and make mistakes, or do those mistakes lead to bad habits that somehow stunt somebody's growth? Look at an Andrew Wiggins in Minnesota, who is being kind of called, the next, Ricky Davis or something like that.
Right.
It's hard to say. What if he was in a situation where he could learn more? Like Tatum.
And John, on the flip side, I would point out, we talked about Dennis Smith, but what about Harrison Barnes, right? Like he grew up in a system where, he got better and better and better. The team got better and better and better, and he winds up leaving. And I wouldn't say he's, I don't know that he necessarily learned much from having been on a championship team.
Right. Yeah. It's so funny that situation matters a lot with everybody in the NBA. You could be in a right situation, the wrong situation, and a good player in the wrong situation ends up being a bad player. Harrison Barnes is a guy that maybe got some of his flaws overlooked because the team was winning. And, it's so hard with different players to kind of predict how they would be in these different situations. Jason Tatum has taken 14 shots or more 10 times this entire season in 71 games, 10 times. And that's not a big number. 14 shots is not a big number.
One thing that I wrote was, he's taken 12 shots 21 times, and the Celtics are 17-4 when he takes at least 12 shots. I mean, he's a guy I think you want involved in your offense. He's so efficient at what he does. And it's such a good jump shot that he has. Even if you're a complete analytics convert and you love the advanced stats and you say you shouldn't take a 16 footer, well, watch Jason Tatum take a 16 footer. You might, you might change your mind a little bit.
Right. Right. That's an entirely different discussion, and I don't want to go down a tangent. I want to say that I'm curious to see how the Houston Rockets do this year in the playoffs, because I've long said that when you ditch a complete area on the floor, it actually makes the defense in a 7-game series, it makes it easier to play defense on them. I wonder how they'll struggle, because they are the poster guys for not shooting that mid-range shot. I believe in a little bit more balance, knowing and understanding that the threes are more efficient, going to the basket's more efficient, but I see the mid-range jumper as a body shot, like in boxing. You got to throw those body shots every once in a while to soften up the defense.
That's right. That's right. And I agree with you. As much as you have to credit Mike D'Antoni with what they've done this year, I've seen Mike D'Antoni over the course of many iterations, going back to Phoenix and all. But he has never been a guy who wants to make an adjustment. And I do wonder if that's going to hurt them in the playoffs, that he is just not very good when it comes to making adjustments.
All right, let's get back to the topic at hand and wrap this up I just want to get your opinion on Tatum as compared to the other rookies. And obviously there's a rookie of the year race that's going on that I think his slump has kind of taken him maybe out of that, at least as far as the top one or two players. But where do you think he fits in this draft class or in this rookie class?
Third, I think he's third. Simmons obviously has sort of had a stranglehold on the award from the beginning, and I think his versatility, the things he's able to do, and we can all point to what he can't do yet, and that's certainly valid. But I think that you look at that team's success and how important he's been to it, the way he's played. I think you'd have to have him one. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is right behind him. As good as they've been in the last 2 months, I think he's maybe in some minds might have even passed Simmons. I wouldn't necessarily say that, but certainly they've established themselves, I think, as 1-2, and I would definitely have Tatum as number 3.
That sounds about right. All right. Hey, Sean Devaney, you guys got to make sure you read his piece on Jason Tatum. It's excellent. And like I said, he actually gets Jason Tatum to say a few things that he hasn't normally said. So that's on the Sporting News. You can follow Sean at Sean Devaney on Twitter. That's with an E at the end, Devaney, Sean Devaney on Twitter. Sean, thanks a lot.
John, thanks for having me.
Great conversation with Sean there. I really appreciate him joining us. He's done it in the past. Sean's great. He's a friend of the show, really, and a great writer. Again, go follow him at Sean Devaney. Read his stuff at The Sporting News and make sure to read that piece on Jason Tatum. All right, that's the Friday show. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you are a first-time listener, welcome. Again, you can find my work at RedsArmy.com and on Boston.com. You can follow me on Twitter at RedsArmy_John. You might know that already by following a Sean Devaney retweet to the show. If you're a Celtics fan and you are just joining us, go back and listen to some of our other shows. It's me, it's Jay King, who's the beat writer for MassLive.com, and Sam Jam Packard, who was once with EEI, and now he's off saving the world on the criminal justice side. And he's our resident comedian, and he's running the March from Madness or Madness from March thing, this weird Celtics Twitter thing. You can find him at Jam Packard. You can find Jay at By Jay King. If you are not a subscriber, please subscribe. Search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast. If you are a subscriber, go ahead, give us that 5-star rating that I so crave. I need it. I need that 5-star rating. I need it. Also, give us a good review and share the podcast. Spread the word. Let everybody know they should be listening to us. The Locked On Celtics Podcast, here on the Locked On Podcast Network.